Hide your kids. Lock the doors. You're listening to HR's most dangerous podcast. Chad Soash and Joel Cheeseman are here to punch the recruiting industry right where it hurts. Complete with breaking news, brash opinion, and loads of snark. Buckle up, boys and girls. It's time for the Chad and...
The Jim Stroud Podcast explores the discoveries and trends forming the future of our lives. Brain-to-brain communication, robot bosses, microchip implants for workers, and artificial intelligence replacing human workers are all happening now. If you want to know what's happening next, subscribe now to the Jim Stroud Podcast.
Yeah, Adidas says it plans to release more Yeezys just under its own branding. Sweet! I can still wear my 1050s guilt-free. Hi, kids. You are listening to the Chad and Cheese Podcast, Does Recruitment Marketing. I'm your co-host, Joel, College Dropout Cheeseman.
This is Chad, Afternoon Delight Soash.
This is Julie rocking my new Chad and Cheese shirt, Kelly.
Yeah! Yes, and on this episode... we put the ho-ho-ho in Home Depot, man versus machine in New York City, and LinkedIn's got trends. Let's do this.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listenersurvey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
That's a sexy t-shirt right there, let me tell you.
Isn't it great?
She looks so comfy. She looks so comfy.
I love it.
It's like the Snuggie from back in the day. That's how she looks. Like she's rocking a Snuggie on the Lazy Boy.
Very ooh, nice. We could actually come out with those. That'd be cool.
No. Don't do it.
Snuggies. No, sir. For winter.
Negatory.
It's a blanket with sleeves.
Oh, man.
Remember the family ones where it had like multiple? Oh, God.
That was pretty bad. That would be awesome, though. Talk about great marketing.
Speaking of marketing, I once met the owner, the founder of Jeggings. Do you remember Jeggings?
Oh, yeah.
They were like jeans but leggings.
Yeah.
And his secret to success was late night TV advertising, which is super cheap. And he knew that if he just did this and paid a little bit in marketing – that the media would pick it up, which they did. And he said those late night 2 a.m. advertisements led to, the Today Show and all this media. So anyway, random. But the founder of Jeggings I met once.
Should we take that tip into recruitment marketing and start doing 2 a.m. cheap commercial advertising?
There's an HR tech vendor out there that's getting some knowledge that will be advertising late night during Maury Povich reruns, I'm sure.
Maury Povich.
Is Maury still on? God.
I don't know. That's where I think DNA, like the DNA tests just exploded. The daddy tests, they just exploded. Nobody knew they even existed until then. They thought they still had to kill rabbits.
DNA exploding everywhere. Exploding everywhere. Who knew?
That could be our new slogan.
Speaking of exploding, should we get to some shout outs for the show?
Let's do it.
And speaking of exploding everywhere, my shout out goes to women. Yes.
Ooh.
Nobody relates to women more than me. So giving them a shout out makes perfect sense. So we're all aware there's a serious shortage in truck drivers, right? Well, like most things men fuck up, women are here to fix all our shit. That's right. Mm. Women are helping to close the driver shortage here in America. The number of women employed in the trucking industry hit 1.6 million in October. That's a record since the BLS started tracking the numbers back in 1990. Women's share of the trucking industry workforce is now at an all-time high of nearly 18% of trucking jobs. Also, a shout out to more women The women of Crocs, yes, Chad's favorite footwear maker. He typically wears them with starched white socks, by the way. has women to thank for its strengthening employment brand. This is from Forbes. Since implementing its Come As You Are strategy 5 years ago, by the way, that's more than 15 years after Kurt Cobain sang Come As You Are, women now make up 67% of its global workforce, with half of their executive team identifying as women. Another side note about Crocs, 50% of U.S. employees identify as people of color, with black and Hispanic workers representing 19 and 24% of its U.S. workforce. Put on those Crocs and wear them with pride. Shout out to women, trucking, and Crocs.
Nothing turns me off more than a woman wearing Crocs.
Crocs and mom jeans are the absolute boner killer of all time.
But what about driving a truck?
Oh, now we're talking.
That's different. She's got her own place.
A girl in a Jeep Wrangler is super hot, by the way.
Well, not just truck. They've got the little sleeper in the back too.
As long as there's a monkey in the passenger seat named BJ. That's BJ
and the bear. That's what I'm talking about. All right, enough of this. My shout out's going to go to AI generated portraits. Okay, is this not the creepiest shit that you've ever seen? Out of nowhere, it's like on all of my social feeds, all I see are these AI, I guess AI generated portraits of people pushing them out themselves.
Oh, yeah. Astronauts, rock stars.
Does anybody know what this is about? How did this even start? Julie, this is a marketing coup because they are everywhere, kind of like Chad and Cheese t-shirts. But how in the hell does this thing work?
Which will never be AI generated, by the way.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, you know, in a population of people who take selfies, they're looking for a way to level up all that content. And this is an incredible creative way to see yourself done in different forms of art and different forms of expression. But there's been some backlash on this because when you go into it, you identify male, female, or other. And if you identify as female, it sexualizes all the images that it generates.
How so? Does it put you like in boudoir photos?
Yes.
Or we could turn Chad into a woman?
So I would employ those who have subscribed to this service to try doing another submission, but submit it as a different gender and see what it does to your photos.
Wow.
By the way, how long before we start seeing companies about us web pages with AI generated portraits of the CEO and the CFO? You know it's
Everybody.
Coming. You know it's coming, everybody.
Not in France, though, because you don't have to have fun in France, okay? Let's just talk about that.
No fun for the French?
France, the no fun country.
Anyway, shout out, Julie.
Oh, I want to give a shout out to Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine.
Bless you.
He just was declared Time's Person of the Year. Truthfully, I'm so glad for that because what a phenomenal leader he has been. Just a perfect example of how to lead people by being directly involved, by communicating constantly, by leading with purpose. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, he's just been such an incredible demonstration of being a good leader. And I'm so glad to see him take Man of the Year.
Not bad for a two-bit actor at one point. I don't know if you've seen some of his Ukrainian television footage, but it's quite entertaining. You wouldn't expect him to be Winston Churchill 2.0, that's for sure.
I tell you, crisis brings out character, my friends, and you don't really know a person until you put them under a little pressure. And I tell you what, this guy, he's turned into fucking Superman is what he's turned into. And I got to give it to his wife as well. I mean, they are getting out as much as possible. Obviously, he's staying in Ukraine doing his thing, making sure that they all know that he's on the battlefield with them. And she is out from a diplomatic standpoint. She's all over the place. And I mean, it's the smartest duo I think I've seen in a very long time.
I don't need a ride. I need bullets.
Mm-hmm. Topics!
All right, we had a lot going on at recruitmentmarketing.com, Julie. Let's talk about Home Depot, shall we? So you penned an article entitled Home Depot Launches Virtual Career Marketplace for Skilled Tradespeople. Home Depot recently launched its Path to Pro Network, a job seeker forum that aims to connect skilled workers and employers. Through the platform, workers can post their credentials and examples of prior work to generate interest from potential customers and businesses. The program also offers a free training program for those interested in pursuing and growing a career in the skilled trades and prepares them for their first job. Chad and I touched on this story on our weekly show, but like most shows, we go about an inch deep. You went way deeper on this. The roots of this problem go way back. Tell us about the article.
Oh, I had to write a whole article on this because I am, first of all, this strategy is genius. And I absolutely wanted to recognize Home Depot for that. Yes. The other is that this is a significant example of there's a problem and there is an opportunity for brands to step in and be the solution. We are running short on tradespeople, skilled tradespeople, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But just like any homeowner knows in the world, you need someone to come fix something within your home. You're going to struggle to get good quality work done because we're short mm-hmm. on people to do that. The businesses that actually serve are struggling to get talent. Doing trade work is actually a skill. We run on those services, our heating, our air conditioning, all kinds of work that's done on our vehicles that transport everything that we have. Mm-hmm. We absolutely depend on tradespeople to keep our lives functioning, and we have a significant shortage of them. That's actually going to hurt Home Depot's bottom line. If they have less tradespeople, they're going to have less sales. Mm-hmm. So how do they fix that? They need to make sure there is the gap in tradespeople is being filled. Now, that isn't just about, let's connect people to jobs. Where they're really doing an outstanding job here is they're also connecting people to free training. You know, in a world where we have, I'd say in the past, we've told people, you won't be successful in life unless you go to college. Right. Like, I know that I grew up in a generation where I was told that repeatedly. The only way you're going to get a great job mm-hmm. is if you go to college. And that was, I believe, built on a foundation that the only way to get an education was to pay for it. But I was also of a generation where information became very accessible. And the internet uh-huh. meant that you could educate yourself simply by going out and seeking out the information that was out there. This is creating an opportunity for people to connect, to learn real skills where there's a real market need for that. And Home Depot has just put themselves right in the center of that entire ecospace for tradespeople. The training, the finding the job, mm. the finding a place, to be an apprentice, to get that skill and that learning. And then, of course, they have all of the supplies needed to do the actual job. It's genius.
Yeah. Joel and I were on the cusp of vocational schools in high schools. I know we had a vocational school in our high school, that actually being flushed out. Again, because everybody was told at that point that you needed to go to college. And I mean, my cousins, I mean, pretty much my entire family were carpenters, electricians, plumbers, and that's just what we had in very blue collar Mansfield, Ohio. But then what happened? You started yanking that funding out of the actual schools. And then today, it's harder than hell to find a plumber. Luckily, I live next door to one. I can go over, knock on the door, and hope he has some time for me. Yeah. But other than that, man, it's not easy. This, from Home Depot's standpoint, is incredibly smart, as you'd said, because you've got construction clients that need talent, because without talent, they can't accept jobs. If they can't accept jobs, they can't spend money on materials. If they can't spend money on materials, Home Depot's not making
Bingo.
Money. Yeah, that's where it comes down to, right? So it's incredibly smart for them. And then if they can just connect more of these individuals with training, it just makes sense. You know, the training schools, not to mention unions. I mean, we need to have a more robust training program that, again, is infused in our schools.
One of the things I found really interesting in the article, Julie, was the No Child Left Behind legislation from 2002 and how that moved so much money into STEM, which is a good thing, but it took away money from the programs that we're talking about. And I think that, Chad and I have talked about my local high school down in, southern Indiana. It's sponsored by auto part store, right? Like, it literally, the store sign is on the school teaching people how to repair cars and things like that. So this marriage of commercialization and education, I think, has been necessary, partly because of government decisions to take away money from these programs into other things. The other thing that I found really interesting was the amount of boomers that I think we take for granted that have been doing a lot of these jobs in the past. They're retiring at a rate of 2.2 million in the U.S. every year. One question I did have for you guys is, you know, the amount of mentorship programs, whether it be, you know, VR headsets that can teach you how to, you know, change a rotator, whatever, of a brake pad, or, you know, are those going to be able to replace the education? Can we do it with technology? Can we do it with mentorship programs? Is there a place for those in this issue?
Yeah, those do-it-yourself videos, like, replace? Well, there's a foundational knowledge you need to do with anything, right? You know, and then you apply your epoxy. Mm-hmm. Right. But epoxy is actually a very dangerous thing to work with if you don't know how to use it. So if you don't have the foundational knowledge of how to use it and you simply watch it and do it yourself and, oh, it just looks like this sticky little liquid. It's like glue. Yeah, that can also, you know, take the flesh off your hand if you're not careful. So there's a foundational knowledge that needs to happen in trades. But then, yes, just like anything else, we build a foundational knowledge. But then we can learn a lot ourselves. We will have to constantly upskill and look for new knowledge no matter what trade you're in, because everything in the world is evolving so quickly. And as the Internet of Things becomes involved with everything, there is a greater level of knowledge that will need to be had to interact with things, as well as information and skill that will have to be acquired to stay ahead of that.
I think that's a great point, because the trades are one of those things where you can't just see a video or read some code and then sort of tinker around on your laptop to figure it out. Like, you can't work with a toilet unless you actually touch a toilet and unscrew things and whatnot. So it's a unique problem with the trades where you actually have to have someone show you or have the actual physical thing there for you to learn it. So I think we can't just Coursera. We can't just LinkedIn Learning our way to more tradespeople in this country. There has to be mentorship programs and apprenticeships.
Yeah, and your point on boomers, I mean, so many of them are retiring so quickly. That's missed opportunity for all of the people who could be learning from them right now.
Oh,
because,
yes.
You know, there's an absolute truth in, you know, you pay someone $200 an hour to come in and, you know, do some work on your house and trades. A very experienced person's going to walk in, point right at the problem, and get it done within an hour. But someone who's not is going to turn into a 6-hour job as they're trying to figure it out and, you know, navigate through things, because they just don't have the experience to act on it and solution it as quickly.
Yeah, there's still a lot of Xers that were in that trade, but those trades, although we don't have the population that the boomers do. So to be able to fill that gap, there's just no way in hell that's going to happen. Now, from a branding standpoint and a brand loyalty standpoint, think of how an individual actually, you know, how loyal they are to a Home Depot if they actually go through a matching and or a training program. I'm not saying it's a training program by Home Depot, but I mean, if you take a company like Home Depot and they know they need this segment to grow, they might actually make a little bit more formalized actions in being able to drive some of these training programs. This might be the first step of, you know, a few more steps.
Yeah, I actually hope this catches on in other areas where we have significant talent gaps. You know, and just spending more money on advertising or building really cool TikTok videos is not going to solve the talent problem.
No, there's no reason why a company can't do this, just like Home Depot is. I mean, and again, you know, my daughter found a training program at the local hospital, and they trained her up, and now she's, you know, a lab tech. She's a phlebotomist. So, I mean, those, they're out there. The problem is access and discoverability.
Yeah, I totally agree. And how can we have such a huge supply of fresh young minds coming into the workforce that are just confused. They're confused by, do I go to college? You know, do I, you know, drive for Uber? Do I, what do I do with my life? And how can we present more opportunities to them? Because I just don't think that we're educating them in all of the ways that they can be successful in their future, in their life. We're still giving them traditional paths into the future of work, which is not the same.
Round peg, square hole.
All I know is, thank God IKEA acquired TaskRabbit. Otherwise, I'd be that retiree sitting on the floor without furniture. We'll be right back.
You've got questions, we've got answers. Business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. Tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business when you need it from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Man versus Machine. Wow, you got medieval on this title, Julie, from Recruitment Marketing, entitled Man versus Machine, New York City Law Attempts to Eliminate Bias in Artificial Intelligence. Well, we talked recently about transparency and pay. Well, more New York City talk, everybody. New York City law will soon require businesses to conduct audits designed to assess biases in all AI-driven systems that are used for recruitment, marketing, and hiring. Under the new law, scheduled to take effect on January of 23, the hiring company will be liable for potential biases and subject to fines for violations. Nearly one in four organizations now make use of some form of automation, AI, or both, to support their HR activities. Regulators have begun to take notice and seek to ensure that companies don't accidentally introduce the potential for further bias through AI technologies. Julie, you go on to talk about examples of bias. Tell us more about this article.
Oh, I have so much I want to say here, and yet, like, so little is known. I'll start with AI, and research that's been done has proven that there is bias in AI. Right now, but they're not alone. So there is research that proves that AI can have bias. And some of that is because a lot of visual AI has not yet been mature enough to accept that there are different kinds of people that look different. So there's some that are associated with that. That's the visual. And the other is that a lot of AI has learned based on data that we already have.
Biased data.
And that data is based on humans and the work that they have done, which has included bias. So we've taught AI to be biased. So there is legitimate reason for us to raise eyebrows to AI and say, hey, you know, we need to make sure we're accountable for what we're building here to not progress the future of recruitment into continuing on with bias. We want to use technology to eliminate that, not carry it on. So there's reason for that. But there's also one in four companies is using some form of AI in their recruitment process. So there's an adaption taking place. So it's real that AI is in recruitment marketing. Mm-hmm. And 67% of all HR leaders believe it's going to improve the experience. So people believe it. In AI, people are using it, but there's also this fact that it can have these problems. So this is all a truth. Mm-hmm. So how do we make sure, right? The best way to make change is to mandate things. But this is also where this gets a little dangerous. There are people making these mandates that are not fully educated on how it's used throughout the industry. How are we going to instruct people to do these types of audits? So that's where we arrive today. We have good intentions for there to be a mandate in New York that all AI is audited. Okay, so how do you conduct that audit? Who conducts that audit? What does that audit include? There's no information. So although it's a wonderful act to mandate that we don't want to see bias in AI and you must review all and audit all your systems you know, within a few weeks. That's great. That's commendable. But with no instructions and no details and no information or path of how to do that, this is going to be a problem. And it has everyone scratching their heads. I gave a talk last week at TA Tech and I spoke on this. And, you know, who I was addressing in that audience were the people who build this technology, the people who create these tech for this space. And what I had said to them is, you know, accountability is the end of the process. First, it begins with ownership, and we own that technology. We're the ones building it. We're the ones buying it. We're the ones using it. So we have to be responsible. Our actions, the ones that we take, need to be responsible. So we shouldn't be waiting for the government to tell us what we should be doing here. We should be being proactive and saying, what AI do I have? What does it touch? What decisions does it make? How does it come to those decisions? And then I want to look at those outcomes to make sure I don't see that there's any bias happening. AI is going to be transformational for us, and that's fantastic. But that is not going to just happen at the flick of a switch. So I have lots to say on this. But truth, what do you do by January 1st? I don't know. There's really not a lot of information on how to conduct these audits.
Well, there isn't a standard or real governing body that's going to enforce it anyway. So to think that this is an end solution that's going to go into place on January 1st is it's fool's gold. Okay. So let's just go there first. What we're doing is we're actually jerking a knot in the industry's tail saying, hey, get ready for this. This is coming. Think about it from this standpoint, from a government standpoint. It went into effect on January 1st, 2023. If I come to your place of work in 2024, and we by then have some sort of a standard in place, you better have it ready and audited, okay? So for everybody to say, well, we don't even know, I totally get that, but I agree. We need to be able to look at third parties to do the audits, not doing these bullshit internal audits ourselves, calling our shit ethical AI, which nobody fucking understands what that even means. So I agree 100%, but this is nothing more than a get ready signal for the rest of the industry to get their shit together, to start working with, and an opportunity for some companies who already do audits today to be able to take some of those older standards that they have around bias, because those laws haven't changed.
Right.
They haven't changed. They're still enforced. So if you use the older laws to be able to start to look at audits for now, have a nice day, kids. Quit bitching and moaning. Just get into work.
We have an EEOC. We have a commissioner named Keith Sonderling. If I'm an employer, how are these rules different from those rules? Do I need different counsel? Like that to me creates some confusion if I'm an employer. And my fear, a little bit like with the transparency thing, was maybe I just need to get the hell out of New York. And every job that was posted in New York is now gone. I'm using a staffing firm. I'm using a third party to recruit now. Do you guys see that issue coming where companies just get the hell out of New York or have some other vendor or third party handle it? Because I don't want to deal with this shit.
I mean, AI is going to find its way in everything. That's going to be hard to do. And I think
you can't run.
Somebody might say, hey, you know, not being in New York today might solve my problem, but it will not. The problem's not going to go away. It's going to spread and it's going to be everywhere. And then it's going to become federal mandates. So I love what Chad said. And like, hey, pay attention to the signal. It's a big flashing light warning you this is coming.
Do you see fewer vendors promoting AI if there's this sort of legislative danger associated
with
it? That's
probably one of the things I'm most excited about now, is that there is some accountability in using the buzzword of AI. You know,
not just AI and DEI, because when you put those both together, then it's like, oh, wait a minute. Our platform is bulletproof. We're using AI and we're using DEI. Now you're looking to get smacked upside the head by the regulation ball bat. I mean, that to me is the stupidest fucking thing you can do if you're a vendor in this space.
Oh, yeah. There's so many out there who claim to use AI. Right. And then those of us who really understand the technology are like, no, you're not. So, but, you know, people make these claims, but now there's accountability to that claim, because now when the employer is knocking on your door and saying, hey, I need to audit your technology because you claim to use AI and it's part of my process now. Oh, actually, we don't use AI. Like, you're going to get caught. You're going to get caught in like using a term as a buzzword when you don't actually have the data to back it up, because you're going to be audited.
And by the way, not just government auditing, like how many lawyers in New York you think are going through websites that say DEI and AI and like researching them and who's used their service and blah, blah, blah for class action lawsuits and legal action. So the government's one layer of fear. The other is if you're promoting and marketing these services, beware that the lawyers might be coming after you as well.
Yep. So accountability goes along with AI now. It is not just a buzzword. It is not just something that we can throw in and say, hey, cool, didn't that just make our lives easier? No, accountability needs to come with AI.
You can't just say the snake oil heals everything. You have to actually back this shit up. I'm curious, lastly for me, on social media, you talk a lot about that in the article as well. Facebook obviously was in the news years ago around you can't advertise jobs or employment opportunities without having sort of a certain tag or going through a particular process. TikTok and Snap don't really have the same, as far as I can tell, legislation and strictness around advertising. Talk about what you saw in the article around if you're going to advertise on TikTok, because those algorithms impact who your ad shows up in front of and what companies should be looking for if they're using social media to advertise, you know, jobs or build their employment brand.
Yeah, so this is where I think there's going to need to be definition around different types of recruitment advertising, because when you're actually promoting a specific job or a role, right, you have to create a posting for that. And there are requirements that speak to that specific job, right? Here, it needs to include these things. It cannot include these things, right? There's a very specific thing to a post. But that's how we traditionally did recruitment advertising. We just made a job posting and then tried to get it out there. But that is not what we do now. We have to do more than that. We have to do storytelling all around that job. That job might be an artifact that is critical to the process and compliance, but you know, we have to do shiny, sparkly things to get people to pay attention to those jobs. And that is where social media comes in, right? We do good storytelling on TikTok, experiences. But these are not directly job advertisements. They are employer branding videos. So when does it go from a job post to an employer brand video? There's a very different area there. Those two things can't all be lumped together with the same compliance. Pay transparency, like that's something like how much are you supposed to disclose when you create an employer brand video that's very general for hiring? Yeah, we're hiring, right? But if you're not speaking about the specific role, do you have to then keep all the same compliance? So I think there's going to be different.
It's on the job.
There's going to need to be a standardization of the different types of advertising we do in recruitment marketing and which ones are connected to that and which ones are not. Now, Facebook is a great story on this one because, you know, Facebook started coming in and saying, all right, you know, we recognize that a job advertisement is different than all other advertisement. So if you select that you are advertising for the purpose of jobs, they take away a lot of features, like you can't target by race or gender or age, right? Good, that you're not supposed to. So that was a really great thing. But then as they started to get deeper into the rabbit hole, they were started saying, great, you know, we'll take all jobs, we'll post all jobs up on Facebook. And then they said, never mind. And then earlier this year, they completely pulled out and they're not doing job feeds any longer with Facebook. So I think they realized how deep the rabbit hole of danger can be as this industry is changing by the minute. New laws are coming in. It is very difficult to be a provider in this space with so much change and so much danger that if you don't provide the right features and services, you are absolutely accountable for running ads that are non-compliant.
It's risk versus reward is really what it is. The risk that we're looking to take versus the reward, which isn't really a lot of reward compared to the actual money that's being spent on other types of advertising. So yeah, just pull it. It's just not worth it for them in this case.
I would love to see the numbers that were put in front of Zuckerberg to make that decision, right? Like, well, there's about, you know, $12 billion of opportunity in the recruitment advertising space. But there's also a $3 billion lawsuit potential, right? So we got to make a decision here, which one we want to lean in on further. And there was a decision made to not continue on the job feed side. So I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in that room to hear that decision being made.
Well, speaking of Zuckerberg and rabbit holes of danger, let's talk about LinkedIn, shall we?
Oh.
LinkedIn recently released its Global Talent Trends report, where they surface data insights from both LinkedIn's economic graph and their own member community to better understand how labor market trends impact candidates, employees, and workplaces. Some of the highlights include hiring is leveling off after historic highs, workers are bracing for an economic downturn, internal mobility increases employee retention, and here's the shocker, candidates consider compensation and benefits their top priority. Julie, what stood out to you most on the LinkedIn Talent Trends report?
Well, a lot of things there are really just validating things that we already know. So, you know, did I walk away from that like, I learned all these new things? Not really, just validation to a lot of things that we already know. But the one that I really gravitated to and loved the data on was candidates increasingly want remote work. Seeing the data on this, there was a story there that I was able to absorb instantly looking at their graph that they showed. Because in February, just this year, 20% of all the jobs on LinkedIn were remote. Okay, so now, a few months later, it's September, 14% of their jobs are remote. So what that tells me is that companies are pulling back on remote jobs. Okay, we know that this is happening as companies are trying to get back into the office. They're pulling back on hiring as many remote workers. So we're seeing that come back and retract a little bit. But what was really interesting is I'm sharing, in addition to that, at the same time, in February, 50% of all the applications on LinkedIn went to those remote jobs, right?
No word on how many were bait and switch, by the way. No word on
yes. No, that's not the point.
But then what happened, right? There's less jobs on LinkedIn for remote work. What happens? The amount of application share to remote jobs actually increased. So 52% of all the applications on LinkedIn went to the remote jobs. What this is telling me is that people are not changing their desire for remote work, right? They are continuing to apply the majority of share to remote jobs. Those remote jobs are starting to decline. So if your job is not remote, you are competing against that significantly because the application volume is going there, not to the other jobs. So, I mean, think about that. 50% of all the applications are only going to 14% of their jobs. Those poor other 86% of the jobs. No one's paying attention and applying to them.
And by the way, this is a global phenomenon. This is not just U.S. This is a global issue.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Take a hint. Take a hint, employers, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, if you do have these positions, and they can be. And again, we've seen so much research demonstrating that remote jobs or individuals who actually went remote, especially during the pandemic, they actually were happier. They had better outcomes. The company had less problem around this, but yet we still want to try to force that round peg into a square hole.
And by the way, throw in a 4-day work week with the work from home stuff. Then you're golden, baby. Then you're golden. So one thing that I thought, that was interesting. We've talked a lot last few years about climate change, diversity, companies getting political. None of that showed up in this survey. Like, people want to be paid more, they want good benefits, and they want flexibility. I'm curious if these issues of, I don't know, societal undertones are going to, like, just start to fade, or they'll still be trumpeted by the media and people in our industry. Because what I saw in this report was we give a lot of oxygen to these social issues, but at the end of the day, they don't mean a whole hell of a lot to employees. Thoughts?
So this is a global report, you know, looking at all things. So the things that surface are global. Now, that statistically includes multi-generation. I would say a lot of those social responsibility areas are not as heavily weighted in some of the older generations as they are the younger. So it matters more towards the talent that's emerging and the talent that is the future of work than it does to those who are more senior and experienced and aging out of the workforce. A lot of the people who are of an older generation have had a lot of tenure at companies, so they build loyalty even at a company that might not be socially responsible. There's a loyalty still. Like, that is something that is, you know, been known as a trait for people who are in older generations, is that they are tremendously loyal. So that's been a real value. But that is not the case when you look at emerging generations who are very distrusting of leadership, of companies, and they're looking for that social responsibility. So I think you're right. It didn't show up on this report. But I think if you went and took smaller segments of specific age groups, you'd see that change. That report would look very different.
Did they even go into it, though? I mean, because this could have been slated specifically to everything other than social responsibility, right? So, I mean, that could have just been an aspect that was not a part of the conversation, which, I mean, that makes sense why it came out the way that it did. It was all focused really on the old-timey version of what a job was versus what it's turning to.
Right.
I think it's fair to say a baseline is, if you're not paying well and giving good benefits, you're at a disadvantage to everybody, no matter or what your political stance on any of this stuff is. The other thing that stood out to me is the importance of upskilling. We've had a lot of companies, startups, get a lot of money in terms of this area of upskilling. It is a really important thing, according to this report. People are asking, you know, how can I do a better job so I can get paid more, get promoted, land my next dream role? If you're not having the conversations of how do we take you from here up to here at your current job, you're going to lose those people over time for companies that do care about upskilling and giving people more mobile mobility in work.
And again, it's all about transparency, wage transparency, career path transparency, upskilling transparency. You have to know what the next step is on your skilling to be able to go from sales into marketing, marketing into sales, into development or what have you. And it's just not there. The mapping, we have seen like the guilds of the world, some of those upskilling and also transparency kind of, you know, internal mobility platforms start to rise. I don't think they're rising enough. We need more transparency, obviously.
I love the conversation of internal mobility, especially because there is this traditional, right? And this is what keeps, you know, recruitment marketing well funded. But there's this traditional view of, you know, we need talent, go out and hunt, right? Go find that talent and let's bring that talent into the organization. There has not historically been this view of, we have talent here. How can we help grow and nurture them into the talent we need for the future? We do more hunting than we do farming and gardening. And the truth is that you can take seeds and plant them and over time nurture them and they will grow into the forest that you need for the future. That's exactly what Home Depot is doing. But we still have this, oh, we need a skill. This person doesn't have it. Let's go hire the person. How about it takes 90 days sometimes to make a hire, and you could probably teach someone that skill in 90 days. And that not only will create greater, you know, retention and satisfaction with the employee that you invested in to grow that skill, but you're also saving a ton on hiring costs and bringing in someone new. So it absolutely makes sense to do more to create internal mobility. It's just not been traditionally the way that we've operated.
Did we mention Julie Callie's in a Chad and Cheese t-shirt, everybody? Holy shit. That's like Julie, more goodness from recruitmentmarketing.com. Let everyone know where they can find you or connect with you.
Yeah, recruitmentmarketing.com. It's a free resource for people who work in the industry. Come join and subscribe.
Julie Callie, everybody. Chad, that's another one in the books. We out.
We out.
Thank you for listening to, what's it called? A podcast. The Chad. The Cheese. Brilliant. They talk about recruiting. They talk about technology. But most of all, they talk about nothing. Just a lot of shout-outs of people you don't even know. And yet, you're listening. It's incredible. And not one word about cheese. Not one. Cheddar. Blue. Nacho, pepper jack, Swiss. So many cheeses and not one word. So weird. Anywho, be sure to subscribe today on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That way, you won't miss an episode. And while you're at it, visit www.chadcheese.com. Just don't expect to find any recipes for grilled cheese. It's so weird. We out!
How much do you understand the future of finance? I'm Jim Roos, a top 10 banking influencer and host of the podcast Banking Transformed, where we dive deeply into the rapidly evolving world of banking and financial technology. Join me as I interview industry experts, thought leaders, and innovators as they unravel the latest banking trends, disruptions, and game-changing technologies reshaping the world of finance. Redefine your understanding of the banking ecosystem. Subscribe now to Banking Transformed, available wherever you get your podcasts, and now available on YouTube.